Ladies and gentlemen, Chikarmi, children of all ages. If children are on the internet that young, that I don't know. They maybe shouldn't be, but I digress. Welcome once again to another episode of My Breakfast with Chikara. I am your host, PJ Drummond, and I am pleased to be joined this week by a distinguished gentleman. Some of you may have heard of him in the annals of Chikara lore. He is the man of a thousand holds, the one and only Lightning Mike Quackenbush. Mike, how are you?
Thank you for having me on. You know, in keeping with the breakfasty theme, I'm having a mocha as we're doing this. But let me throw this out there to you. I want to draw this distinction, and maybe there's a story to come out of this as I just derail this right off the bat.
That's fine.
See, I do other podcasts where I'm used to just like tanking over my co-host, so you know this is no different for me. But you know, to distinguish, I am the master of a thousand holds, which is a little loftier than the man of a thousand holds.
This is true.
Having said that, I want you to know that in no way am I superior to the guys who have carried that moniker, like Johnny Saint, or Dean Malenko. And, you know, previous to them, as far back as I think like the late 1950s, George Kidd was the man of a thousand holds. So there are clearly some technical wrestlers of far greater acumen than my own who have taken that title and have never ascended to the role of master, which I guess just seem more marketable.
It's the general progression that one sees in any sort of martial arts movie where the student must take over from the master and become the master, really.
Now, you know, George Kidd, by the time I had begun wrestling, I think he'd passed away. So, you know, that was way before my time. And while I've had a few phone conversations with Dean Malenko, I've never actually met him in person. Whereas Johnny Saint, at least, I've had the opportunity to not only wrestle with him and spend some time in the ring with him, but to befriend him. I've had lunch with him on a number of occasions. We even kind of stay in touch socially now. So if anyone, I guess, you know, I've actually learned a bit from Johnny Saint, but this is a strange thing, you know, kind of, and I know you're of the same ilk. You and I have even had conversations to this exact effect, that we were tape traders.
Absolutely.
You know, so much of the international wrestling I experienced early on was through, like, the magic of the VCR, and that's how I was introduced to Johnny Saint. Like, I learned more from him studying all of his matches, like, in slow motion, like, pause, advance the frame, pause, advance the frame, than I have in person with him, because you know, I've really only maybe spent, if you added it all together, maybe 5 days total with Johnny Saint, whereas I've studied probably between 60 and 70 of his matches over and over and over again. So when you total up, like, the number of hours, I've probably learned more from watching him on my television screen than I have in person.
Interesting. And that actually leads me into an interesting thought that I had along this. Is it better to be the master of the thousand holds or the master of the thousand counter holds?
I've often made that remark, like, when doing interviews or, you know, when people ask me about Saint. The thing that springs to mind, even though, of course, he still is referred to as the man of a thousand holds, is he's really, in my opinion, the greatest counter wrestler of all time. Like, there's no one it's more – I can't think of a wrestler that it is more entertaining to watch him escape from a hold than Johnny Saint. Like, that really is his thing, and I don't know that anyone will ever trump him.
Probably not, no. Yeah. I mean, there's a depth to what he does, and as the cliche goes, more than likely he has forgotten more than any of us would ever know.
Right. I think that's a very true statement as it relates to some of those great British masters. And it's a shame so many of them now are inactive. And this is something, too, which I think will probably strike the wrestling world as being a little bit of news, because he's absolutely done nothing to publicize this. And I kind of think in his own way that maybe in light of his retirement in the 1990s is the reason for this. But Saint no longer wrestles.
Okay. Officially now, he no longer wrestles.
Right. And okay. I was speaking to him about you know, just wrestling in general. And he said, it's really, you know, that itch that we all get to do it. He said, it's finally gone from my system. And I said, do you have anything upcoming? And he said, no. And he said, I don't think I'd take something if it came my way. And that when I was done having this conversation with him, I really was like almost depressed because I feel like the world needs a Johnny Saint. Like, there should always be a Johnny Saint in the world of wrestling. And so after this, not long thereafter, I had the opportunity to... I had been talking to two other guys who were contemporaries of him, one of whom has turned into a tremendous friend of mine, Johnny Kidd, mm-hmm. And another who I barely knew at all, Steve Gray, okay. Who was another contemporary of Saint's, and just kind of talking to them about this. And, you know, I think part of it is because he did make... a little bit of a production anyway about retiring in the 1990s, and then he came back. Mm-hmm. And I think the way they sort of view that in England is very different from how we view it in the U.S., right? Like, Terry Funk retires every other week.
Sure.
You know, like, the wrestling retirements really don't mean anything to us here, but I think over there they carry a little more weight. And so I think Saint maybe feels like it'd be disingenuous of him to say, oh, I'm retiring again. Mm-hmm. It really was as if he just kind of said, you know, I'm done with it for now. And I was talking to Kid about this, and I said, do you think, like, a shame, if that really is the end, for him not to have a proper retirement match of some kind? Mm-hmm. And I said to Kid, I said, do you think that you and I could talk him into it? Because he really doesn't stay in touch with many other people from the world of wrestling anymore. And mm-hmm. And really, like, the last little bit I heard from him, he wrote me a very nice note that coincided with the 10th anniversary of Chikara, which just passed in the month of May.
Wow.
And I really felt like if there was anything we could do to persuade him to have one final match, mm-hmm. that effort should be made. And Kid and I have kind of talked about that, and I'm really hoping that maybe later this year. I've had a couple offers to return to the UK, mm-hmm. And whenever I go over there, because Johnny Kidd is just such a wonderful guy. Like, he, no matter where I am in that country, like, he finds me so we can have lunch. like, I'm really hoping that I can sit down and maybe talk to some of Johnny Saint's contemporaries about, could we collectively coax him into doing one more. And as I'm sure you know, and I don't know how crazy into, like, old school world of sport British wrestling you might be, but a lot of his contemporaries are either, sadly, they've passed away, they're mm-hmm. deceased, or they've disappeared. Like, they're not, you know, they don't take part in those wrestler reunions that they do. Mm-hmm. They've just disappeared off the grid. No one knows where they are.
I had heard of that. That's my sort of introduction to that was, did you ever, there was a book released called The Wrestling.
Absolutely, by Simon Garfield.
Exactly, yes, and sort of his search for Les Kellett,
mm-hmm.
and how Les had literally just disappeared. No one had any clue where he was, and sadly, he never found him. So mm-hmm. it's sort of this mystery.
Well,
that remains.
Let me amend that for you. Actually,
okay,
at the very end of the book,
that's right.
He does respond to Garfield, but refuses to be interviewed.
Ah, yes, okay.
He spends the whole... He's really fascinated. That book is fantastic, by the way, and I'm sure you can find it online and order it. I think I got it for maybe the equivalent of $14. Like, the shipping probably cost me more than the book. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's The Wrestling by Simon Garfield, and he's really fascinated by Kendo Nagasaki, the British Kendo Nagasaki, not that other one,
mm-hmm.
and Les Kellett. And, you know, Les Kellett was a tremendous influence on Nigel McGuinness and tons of other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
Kellett was sort of, you know, we don't use this expression anymore for certain reasons, but they called him a hard man. In that Les Kellett, you know, they just said, like, he would amuse people in the ring. Like, he'd make these funny faces, and his body language was very peculiar, and it would make you laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But away from the ring, they said he was vicious.
Hmm.
And if you caught him on a foul-tempered day, he would wreck you. And so the author, Simon Garfield, kind of feels like, he, you know, he's got to be a little beguiling about the way he approaches Kellett because he doesn't want to irritate him.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, the response he gets from Kellett, he sounded like a changed man. You know, he said, I hate myself, which was stunning to read these words from Kellett. He said, I hate myself for refusing you, was what he said to Garfield, but he wouldn't do the interview. And there really is a magic to those British masters. And for whatever reason, it seems like they've never really captured the imagination, or they failed to. Like, you know, you probably belong to, like, a group of guys who maybe you traded tapes together or whatever.
Absolutely.
And when I was at the height of that sort of thing, where, like, every free dollar I had went into buying more wrestling tapes,
mm-hmm.
I watched every Japanese wrestling tape I could get my hands on. I watched everything out of Mexico that I could get my hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pay to get tapes of ECW, even though I live 40 minutes outside of the city. I had to pay a guy who would record it for me in Florida because that's where it aired, and would send me, like, a third generation dub.
Wow. Wow.
of ECW, just so I could watch what was going on, because I had to see it all. But I was ignorant. Nor I wouldn't have even known who to ask to get World of Sport tapes. Would you?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it was one of those things, like, it was a buried treasure that suddenly appeared.
Yes.
And I think, like, I know you've discussed before the initial awakening to that was the Michinoku Pro Show, mm-hmm. in 1996. These days, where,
yes.
Johnny, of course, had that retirement initially, mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, everybody was awakened to this gentleman who did very strange things, and
right.
then the search went on from there.
Right, it was really crazy that was intended to be his last match, and that's what woke up a whole audience to him.
Absolutely.
You know, I kind of remember that first time when Chris Hero and I got our hands on, there was like a compilation of random British matches, and they weren't all lightweights. You know, Johnny Saint was a lightweight, mm-hmm. and a lot of the guys that I really enjoyed watching, the Johnny Kids and the Steve Grays, Mike Flash Jordan, Jim Breaks, etc., mm-hmm. who I can sit and watch them endlessly. I never get tired of those matches. Mm-hmm. They were not the featured act. It was the heavyweights on this tape. You know, it was Big Daddy, who was sort of the British equivalent of Hulk Hogan, maybe, for lack of a better way of putting it, or Mal Sanders, some of the bigger guys. And, you know, the lightweights really weren't the featured act, but there was just a little bit of that. And that outside of that retirement match with Naohiro Hoshikawa from These Days, that was like the first, and that was more like Saint in his prime,
mm-hmm.
that we got to see. And it was just, it was hypnotic,
yes.
to watch him. You could not take your eyes off of him. And I really thought that was very, very, I'll equate it with this. Not all that long ago, a Chikarosaurus Rex ago, Johnny Saint wrestled Johnny Kidd in Reading, Pennsylvania, in my hometown. And a friend of mine brought his son, who I believe was 9 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this would be a fascinating barometer, because if you're groomed on WWE television, right, as a 9-year-old would be, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
he would know John Cena, he'd know Rey Mysterio, he'd know The Undertaker, he'd know Randy Orton. Those are the characters that he would know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the style, those type of television matches, you know, those kind of like microwaved wrestling matches. That's what he would know.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, stylistically, that is almost as far removed from what the World of Sport classic British style is like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very slow. It's sort of... I think of it, you know, when they tell you those building blocks of storytelling, this is what I'm going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell it to you. This is what I just told you. You know, you tell it to them in digestible chunks. And that's really true, that British style. When the match was over, I was really curious to see what my friend's son thought of Johnny Saint and Johnny Kidd.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all kind of like, you know, watching very intently from behind the curtain, like trying to absorb any, you know, anything that those guys left,
mm-hmm.
Out there for us to suck up. And, his son turned to him as soon as it was over, and he said, "Will they be back next month?"
Wow.
And I thought, that's great that these two guys, especially Saint, who is so humble and I think really lacks a perspective. He really does not know how influential he has been on so many people. He just mm-hmm. doesn't. He chooses not to know it, in a way. Like, he's sort of insulated himself against that sort of thing. And
mm-hmm.
Even at, you know, I'm not even exactly sure what age John is, but that he can still, you know, at whatever age he is,
mm-hmm.
hypnotize an audience like that, young and old, jaded wrestling fans, current wrestling fans, no matter what, and takes you on that fantastic journey that wrestling represents. I think it's just a testament to him as like the consummate master. And Johnny Kidd was just like you couldn't have made that any better. Like, that was so perfect, that little capsule, that moment, however long that lasted, 15 minutes, like that was the most perfect. I can't imagine how you could give something better and say, this is British wrestling, and hope for a better result.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think those are always those moments that we remember, especially when we're seeing them in such a strange context that we might never have thought to see them in. I mean, with World of Sport, it was always, you know, you kind of had to watch it on tape. There was no real opportunity to see it live. A moment for me that happened like that was I had traveled to this is when I was living in Pennsylvania at the time. The Pottstown Wrestling Federation had put on a show, and it was with Shinya Hashimoto from New Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And there I was, literally with 20 other individuals, seeing this man who has sold out the Tokyo Dome, 60,000 right. strong, and I get to see him literally 3 feet from my face.
Right. And those matches he had with Nobuhiko Takada and Muta. Oof. Muta had some amazing ones. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how there aren't more severe injuries from that sheer drop brainbuster. I pity any individual that has to deal with any sort of situation like that or did from him, because right, it was right. And I remember it was a four-way match. It was him, Dylan Knight, Steve Corino, mm-hmm. and a gentleman from the UK, Gary Steele.
Wow, I do remember that. All those Hashimoto matches in the U.S. were so, like, surreal to me. I remember following it very closely.
It was very strange. And, yeah, it when he stepped on Gary Steele's spine through his stomach doing a double foot stomp, I knew that was a man I would never, ever want to irritate.
Right, right.
Ever. But there was just this aura to it at the same time.
Sure.
That, yeah, I felt like I was very lucky and very special that day. Not to mention I accidentally hit Bill Apter with my car door as I was getting out of the car because it was dark and I couldn't see him. So,
that's something in and of itself.
It is, yeah.
You know, there are those guys that you always kind of get that sense like, I don't think I should irritate him. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of the coin here, and not to turn this into the Johnny Saint Tribute Hour,
not at all.
Which I will gladly participate in.
Sure.
One thing that always struck me is like nothing could irritate him. You know, like he's just so laid back and just like he's unflappable in that way. And you know, we had a tag match about a year ago where it was Saint and I against Colt Cabana and Johnny Kidd, and this was kind of put together at the request of Johnny Kidd, which is really flattering to even be considered. Like to be in that man's thought process is very, very flattering. And mm-hmm. Of course, Cabana and I still see each other quite regularly, but I don't see, you know, Saint and I don't bump into each other. We're in different continents. And
sure.
Even though Kidd and I stay in touch or have lunch here and there, it's rare. And one thing that had kind of dawned on me after speaking to Saint about the fact that he's no longer really accepting offers to wrestle, I mentioned this to Cabana because I just felt so down about it. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is such like a terrible thing that, that Johnny Saint is, for all intents and purposes, retiring again. And Cabana said, was that tag match we had the last Johnny Saint match? And I thought that would be, you know, in a weird way, like just being that footnote in trivia to me would be almost a footnote in history, the answer to a trivia question. It would almost be kind of strangely rewarding in a way. Mm-hmm. So I asked Saint that, and he said no. He said about a month after that match, he wrestled a match in France, and something about that really irritated him. And he said that, you know, that was it. So one of the things I wanted to make sure of right away was that his experience here at Chikara was super positive, because especially having like the level of experience I do now, right, like going into my 19th year as a pro and having been involved with Chikara since day zero, mm-hmm. I always feel like to an extent I will always be the ambassador of Chikara to the world. So when a Johnny Saint or a Manami Toyota or someone of that caliber comes, if they don't have a good time, if their experience isn't positive, like I feel responsible for that. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make sure that there was nothing negative about that last trip here that maybe soured Saint on the wrestling experience overall. And he said, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, I was treated with such respect and reverence. He said, I was almost embarrassed, you know, the way people respected me or regarded me. And he said, but the thing in France was really quite different. And I said, you know, are the guys there no good? And I've never heard a cross word out of the unflappable Johnny Saint. And he mm-hmm. summed up his experience in France like this. He said, Mike, bloody awful.
Wow.
So I was like, oh, I'm not going near that.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
all right. All right. Well, I mean, I know just from growing up in a country that was exposed to a lot of British media, I would imagine some of his humbleness, I think it's part of British culture almost.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, the level of hero worship for the celebrities is not quite the same. I mean, the American media tends to, they focus on scandal and they enjoy sort of the schadenfreude of it all. Whereas mm-hmm. in the British media, they'll be downright mean to you if they need to be, but if they don't feel the need to, they just kind of let it be. So mm-hmm. I think it, in a way, it keeps the athletes humble in some ways. They're not showered with this unnecessary level of appreciation as if they are the most special people in the world. They're obviously very special at what they do. And so when I'm sure it's such a different culture shock for Johnny when he experiences that sort of exuberant outpouring of love for him in the ring.
Right. And I think one of the things that's really different about the generations of wrestlers that mm-hmm. preceded you and I, you know, as members of the greater wrestling community is mm-hmm. there was definitely, I really went through this, when I had the opportunity to meet Demolition, Axe and Smash at a King of Trios of some years ago. Mm-hmm. In that, because those guys are really of the generation of wrestlers where it was not acceptable to let other wrestlers know that you were a fan.
Yes.
You know, that was really like, that was the dirtiest thing that you could be in their minds, was to behave like a fan or to express that. You know, to go up to another wrestler and tell them, like, I so admire what you do mm-hmm. in the ring, and you are a tremendous inspiration to me, and I just wanted to thank you for that. There was a time when that was 100% unacceptable in the world of wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I think Saint comes from that, right? Where that's the yeah. last thing another wrestler is going to do is come up to you and pay you a compliment like that, because that was considered inappropriate at a time. And I for one, am really glad, whether it's the preponderance of the internet or whatever it is, whatever you want to blame it on, mm-hmm. that like the paradigm has shifted. That's really not true in the wrestling business anymore. And for me to be able to, for example, and you realize this because, you know, you've been in a Chikara locker room, but probably a lot of our listeners have not.
Right.
That especially being the senior most guy, I'm often called upon to introduce guests before the live events. If we have a special guest who comes in, that responsibility falls to me as the senior most guy. And I get to stand up in front of everyone and introduce a special guest. Mm-hmm. And I got to do that for Sean Waltman. The 1-2-3 Kid, who is a massive influence on me. Mm-hmm. And to get up and to stand in front of a group of people for a few minutes and pay tribute to someone, you know, just a few years ago, probably even, would have been like, oh, no, absolutely not. There's no way you can do that. You know, you'd be that would be frowned upon. And in a way, like, I think there's groups of guys for whom to finally hear that verbalized out, you know, in public or in front of their peers, in front of their, you know, coworkers and everything else. Like, that's a really validating thing. And I don't think I really understood the power of that mm-hmm. until that day with Waltman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, because I think for so long, there was almost a conflict for wrestlers. Mm-hmm. The accolades that they would receive, the ones that would have such high honors. I mean, the Slammies aside, you know, it was coming from an area of the press that they didn't necessarily respect, right. In terms of newsletters like the Wrestling Observer and things like that. You know, they didn't necessarily connect with what that was doing. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, the accolades could be there. They were just as genuine, but they couldn't enjoy them.
Right.
At the, you know, and things like that. So, but to be spoken of that way in front of one's peers, I think in private almost means a lot more.
Sure.
You know, you're not out in front of everybody. And I think that's more disarming, I think, to most people. It's, mm-hmm. You know, those moments when it is more intimate and private in that way.
You know? Right. And I think there's a difference between, I would like to think that on those occasions when I've been called upon to, you know, introduce a special guest like that to the group or whatever, that the subject of my oration mm-hmm. knows how very sincere I am mm-hmm. in what I say, because certainly there are people out there who, you know, you come on some radio show or whatever, and the host makes up the, you know, whatever. It sounds like a used car salesman, you know, like trumping up the details of this lemon car or whatever. And it was something disingenuous about it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I knew, not just because I told him as much the first time we ever met, but I could see how much that moved Sean. Mm-hmm. You know, to hear that. And similarly, you know, I was so very, very fortunate to have the very first time she was ever in the United States, I got to introduce Manami Toyota to the group. Mm-hmm. And even going through a translator, I could see how moved that she was by that. And in a lot of ways, you know, I've been blessed. I've been fortunate. I've been whatever you want to say. I've had some really wonderful, wonderful things happen in my wrestling career that never in a million years I think would really, really happen for me. And it's great to be able to, you know, when people say like, oh, well, you know, what's like a real high point? Or I get asked that, it seems like, twice a week in these like email interviews that I get mailed. Like, what's been the biggest moment of your career? What's the high point? And the thing is, a lot of it is not the stuff that happens in the ring while the lights are on in front of fans. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times it is something like that that's a little more intimate behind closed doors where you get to stand up in front of everyone. And, you know, a lot of times at Chikara, these are my trainees, or you know, these are people I came up with, people who I love and respect, and I get to stand up with them. You know, with a Manami Toyota is a great example of that, or Sean Waltman, the 1-2-3 kid, and I get to express how very, very important and meaningful they are to me personally, and to what we do. You know, to everyone active in our craft, and to see that maybe for the very first time in their career, someone has told them this sincerely. Mm-hmm. Like that's a very special, very unique moment in time that can never be duplicated again. And I really cherish those kinds of moments when I'm fortunate enough to be the guy that gets to stand up and do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think actually, as you point that out, the same with Manami Toyota, like with Johnny Saint, I think also what Chikara has provided for them is a validation of something grander, in the sense of, you know, they were there obviously when World of Sport was hot. Manami Toyota obviously was around when Joshi Women's Wrestling was absolutely huge. Mm-hmm. But to know that that is also bigger outside of your own backyard, mm-hmm. I think is something amazing too. I recently rewatched her debut, the weekend she was in, and you could see even as she came to the ring that she was in some ways surprised by the reaction of the people around her, of the fans, mm-hmm. and everything like that. I mean, to know that something that you have given yourself to means that much more to so many other people that, you know, don't even, in her case, speak her language, has to be incredibly moving and, you know, almost a shock to have to deal with.
Right. And yeah. You may know, I mean, you're really steeped in the Joshi history, even more so than I am. I think you probably know this information better than I, but she started training, what, when she was 13 or 14 years old?
Something along those lines, yes.
Yeah. Right. Like, this is a woman who really has given her entire life to something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the little bits that I've had the chance to talk to her, you know, just about the idea that, like, what if that day came when she can't wrestle anymore? And that's how she supports herself. That's how she's made her living. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a very frightening prospect, the idea that, because, you know, there used to be that taboo that the women used to retire at age 25, mm-hmm. or if they got married or pregnant, they retired immediately. Mm-hmm. And luckily, there's been a real change in the regime and the hierarchy and the way things are done in Joshi wrestling, that sort of like oppressive, I don't know, outdated, blah, 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 doesn't exist anymore. But in the same way that, like, I lamented that conversation where Saint said to me, you know, I think that I don't have the itch anymore. Mm-hmm. If I got that email from Toyota and she said, you know, I don't think I'm going to do it anymore, like, that to me is like a loss on a grander scale, like, beyond mm-hmm. the fact that, like, I'm going to walk around that day, like, with a dark cloud over me. And I love, and without tipping my hand too much, like, I love when I get those kind of emails from, like, Manami Toyota specifically, mm-hmm. because I'm such a tremendous fan, and she says something like, you know, we've got to do trios again, you know, or I love hearing that kind of enthusiasm from people mm-hmm. Who they're like a reflection of me as a fan. Mm-hmm. Because that, I think, has to be the ultimate goal. And I'll paraphrase that. And I've paraphrased this badly in other interviews that I've done. I'm a tremendous fan of David Byrne, the front man from the Talking Heads. Mm-hmm. And as much as I love the Talking Heads work, I'm an even bigger fan of his solo work. And I see him as like a creative maverick. He's like the Renaissance man of rock. He was even on the cover of Time magazine, being promoted as such once, the Renaissance man of rock. And he made this remark about the recording of his 1989 solo album, Hey Momo, which is all Latin music. And I think it's his very finest work. He said, I got to a point where I wanted to make music like the music I enjoyed. Mm. And he did. He went out and made an album like that. And you could hear it going that way if you listen to the last Talking Heads studio album, Naked. But nevertheless, mm-hmm. that statement has always resonated with me, because that's a guy whose sort of creative initiative I really do admire and respect. And I think when Chikara gets to feature a Johnny Saint or a Manami Toyota or the 1-2-3 Kid or things like that, I recall that phrase, the idea of creating something that is like the version of it that you enjoy most. Mm-hmm. And of course, especially with Saint, or Toyota as well, and I think you were there when I expressed as much to the group. Mm-hmm. If I could go back and watch one wrestling event over and over and over again, I'm going to a desert island, I could only take one. Mm-hmm. Top of the list these days, Michinoku Pro from October 10th, 1996, without a shadow of a doubt. And that opens with Johnny Saint's retirement match. Or I think about that Big Egg Wrestling Universe. I mean,
yeah,
that is an unbelievable card. And that, to me, I mean, there are bigger stars than Manami Toyota on that card. Mm-hmm. But that, to me, was like a message to the world from Manami Toyota that said, you know, wake up and mm-hmm. pay attention, because I'm about to change everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, again, some of these parallels between where she was and between where Johnny Saint was, slightly different in some sense. But I mean, Manami at times could very easily be almost overshadowed from the larger than life individuals that she was battling. I mean, with a Bull Nakano, with Aja Kong, Akira Hokuto, individuals like that, and obviously Johnny Saint dealing with individuals like Big Daddy and things like that. These extreme larger than life characters, but yet their influence and what they gave to wrestling is no less important.
Mm-hmm.
It's striking me, maybe I'm just grabbing for connections out of thin air, but I think it's striking me very interesting about what they've done in their careers and how it's being focused through what their work in Chikara. Go ahead.
They are similar in this way, in that like those were two really unique wrestling bubbles.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Saint never came out of that bubble, right? It's not like oh, you remember that time he was in the WWF?
Sure.
No. Like, that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Saint was always in that bubble. Like, maybe with really the exception of that 2 weeks he spent with Michinoku Pro or whatever that was in Japan, right, as he wrapped up his career. You know, mm-hmm. he did a couple, like, local arena shows. He wrestled Masato Yakushiji and a couple of the other younger guys, and he wrapped up with Hoshikawa there at These Days.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with Toyota, right? That, if anything, was really impenetrable for its era was the Joshi bubble.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you know, there have been books written that exposed a lot of, you know, all the dirty blah, blah, blah behind the scenes and everything else about that. Like, that bubble was so strictly maintained by incredible power players with enormous influence in Japanese culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because for whatever reason, you know, whatever their motives might have been. And, you know, Toyota was, it wasn't like, hey, you remember that week that Toyota was in AAA?
Right.
Right? Like, that didn't happen.
No.
Because others did, right? We had Aja Kong in WWF, you know, where
yeah.
Dynamite Kid did leave England and went other places, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Saint and Toyota are unique in that way, in that they really stayed in their bubbles, and then those bubbles just, they just, It's not that they popped, but it was just like they imploded, right? World of Sport just collapsed in and upon itself. When that was canceled off TV in 88 or 89, whenever that was, by that British television executive who didn't want wrestling on World of Sport anymore, Greg, I can never think of his name. And he has a really funny, like his last name is like so appropriate. It's like Greg Poop. Like that's his name. Or the same thing, right? Like in 2001, I would say it was really like that last gasp for Joshi. And, you know, All Japan Women's just imploded upon itself. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure both of them, you know, in their own respective ways were like, what do I do now? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Toyota went independent. And I asked Saint, one day we were just sitting around. We showed up at this card, you know, 18 hours ahead of bell time. And we had nothing better to do than go get a cup of coffee. And I said, tell me what happened. Like, when World of Sport got canceled, like, what did all the guys do? Mm-hmm. And he said, most of them, he said this to me flat out. He said, most of them, Mike, had the good sense to get out. And he said he was the last one. There's a group, and you can get tapes of this out of Wales. It's called Reslo, which, you know, Welsh is not exactly like English, but the words are close enough. As you can guess, Reslo is wrestling.
Sure.
And Saint said, he said, you know, there'd be a caravan of us that would go to Wales because that's the only place that still had regular work after the collapse of British wrestling. And he said, you know, one month I'd go and there'd be six of us in the caravan, and the next month there'd be five, and then there'd be four. And he said, at the end, it was just me going. And he said, that's when I knew. He said, it was over. And so, you know, they both must have gone through that period where they must have felt like they went from, right, Johnny Saint was like the peak of that form, in the same way that to me Toyota represents the peak of hers, and yet they must have gone through for that, for being at the zenith. They must have also experienced that nadir, like when the bubble imploded. They must have both felt that same way, like this is the end of the run for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there've got to be days when Manami Toyota, who still makes her living, you know, as an independent in Japan, walks out in front of 50 people and thinks, I'm really a long way from Big Egg Dome.
Absolutely.
You know,
a
Big Egg Wrestle Dream Slam 2 of Danger.
So what does that mean to you as you just said, entering your 19th year in wrestling and being, you know, the most senior individual in this promotion and there since day one that has provided these moments for these individuals and exposed them in such a way?
It's just like an expression, I think, of the type of wrestling that I love. Mm-hmm. And it has to be that, you know, it really does, because When you wear, as you know, it's a very tight-knit family at Chikara. Mm-hmm. We use that expression a lot of times in wrestling, but it never has it ever been more true for me in all the places I've gone than it is at Chikara. And everyone, you know, they wear multiple hats. They take on all these responsibilities because we don't have Panda Energy putting millions and millions of dollars into it for us to hemorrhage out our behinds at the end of the fiscal year. Mm-hmm. We don't have, you know, like that magic money backer guy that shows up and signs giant checks so that we can go out and like, yeah, let's do Kenna Kobashi and this guy. Cause you know, mm-hmm. we don't have that. We really have to, we like survive on our wits. Mm-hmm. And, all that work and, the sacrifices and everything else that go into it. If there was never a feeling of accomplishment, if there was never a feeling like I am closer to, I've made wrestling closer to the aesthetic that I personally love, then I think you wouldn't see things like you see with us, where Ultra Mantis Black, Hollow Wicked, and Icarus have been with us since day one, and they're with us right now. They haven't gone anywhere. From the day Bryce Remsburg walked through our doors, Eddie Kingston walked through our doors, Jigsaw walked, you know what I mean? These guys, they stay part of the family. Mm-hmm. And because everyone collectively moves us closer to whatever that thing might be. And sometimes I think we don't really know. We just know we must along the way. Because what is that thing? There used to be a time, mm-hmm. definitely when I broke into the wrestling business, when the object of every independent wrestling company was to get TV. Like, that was it. Like, and I can remember being in locker rooms where, like, these salty promoters would be like, listen, We're on cable channel 351 at 1 a.m. every alternate Thursday. Please tell your families to watch. You know, like, that's it. Look out, Vince. We're coming for you. You know, like, oh, man, channel 351. Like, who cares? That's just not, this is 2012. That's just not relevant anymore. Like, I'll have more people watch me on YouTube than will watch me on channel 351. And if you're going to make your whole business model, like, the ultimate goal is to get on channel 351. Thursdays at 1 a.m. Like, if that's the whole thing you're aspiring to, like, you really need to get with the times. Like, that really isn't relevant, or you're doing it for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. And you, at this stage of the game, you know, for me, like I said, you know, in my 19th year, like, I really have to be doing this for the right reasons, or otherwise I'm going to arrive at a point where I'm going to look back and think, is this what I've wasted my entire adult life on? Mm-hmm. Like, there must be something more grandiose, mm-hmm, than Channel 351 Thursdays at 1 a.m. Like, the things that used to define success in the world of wrestling have been so radically changed just in the last 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm, that I can't even relate to a lot of the experiences I had when I first broke in. Mm-hmm. We are writing the guidebook for the future of wrestling, and I think, as long as that is sort of like the unspoken mission statement of Chikara, we're on the right track. And along the way, I think what's great about that, with our eyes forward, is that we will always pay tribute to our heroes from the past. And that is exactly what every time, you know, I pop that DVD in and I see Johnny Saint set foot in a Chikara ring, mm-hmm, or I watch the expression, and you know, she's got a great poker face, Manami Toyota, mm-hmm, you know, like, you really have to study her expression to see the nuances in what she's communicating to you through her face. Or I think about that moment, you know, behind closed doors, addressing the entire Chikara family about the overall, you know, the contributions and the importance of the 1-2-3 kid to each and every one of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I think those are the kind of moments that we can never do without as we sort of trailblaze away into the future.
I'm feeling slightly bad right now that I did not have, like, Battle Hymn of the Republic playing behind you through that rousing speech.
I hope it's a rights-free song.
Yes.
Yes. For us to get sued over Battle Hymn of the Republic.
But. Yes, that would not be good. That would not be good. I've decided to actually do one quick, complete, just out of the blue. This makes no sense based on the context of anything that you were just saying. What is the one piece of candy that you just would probably go overboard eating?
Oh, boy. You know, recently I've had the opportunity to pillage a young person's pumpkin post-Halloween. And when I choose to do that, and I do it like, I don't want you to get cavities. You know, I have a good excuse. It's a Reese's peanut butter cup. Like, that to me, okay, that from Halloween, that was like the ultimate. Mm-hmm. And I would gladly, because there were definitely ones I wouldn't eat, like Mounds and Almond Joy. Those are two mouthfuls of yuck. I don't want those.
Sure.
I don't want those pink, white, and black Good and Plenty's. Mm. The one that tastes like licorice, which really just tastes like a flat tire. Mm-hmm. I don't want that. I would trade those away in a heartbeat to get my hand on a Reese's peanut butter cup. But, you know, that's kind of like one and you're done. Whereas, yes, when I go to the movies, which doesn't happen all that often, but mm-hmm, they have this like $8 box of Junior Mints.
Ah, yes.
And I'll put that whole thing down. I mean, if you make a bigger size, I'll buy that and I'll put that one down. Like, I don't care how big the Junior Mints box is. I'll put it down.
All right. All right. So now everyone knows, bring Mike Junior Mints.
Let me ask you this too. This has nothing to do with anything.
Sure.
But, I was just recently, I was road tripping, and I happened to be in the car with Soldier Amp, and we stopped at a rest stop somewhere, and I was kind of observing in this convenience store the way candy is laid out, and from convenience store to convenience store, mm-hmm, there is a similarity. Like, there's like an unconscious candy hierarchy. Like, toward the top is where you're going to find Snickers and Hershey bars and Reese's and the top namers. Mm-hmm. And then down along the bottom is like Mallow Cup.
Yes.
Whatchamacallit, which is a Hershey's product, by the mm-hmm way. But there's kind of like the undercard. of candy. And I wonder, I don't know this, I'm just throwing this out there. Do you think that those like candy manufacturers like Hershey's or M&M Mars, that there's a contractual spot where the candy has to be, like M&M's must be a rack above Rolo. Like, do you think they're, you know what I mean? Like, we wouldn't know that, right? I'm not in the candy industry. But I wonder, like, is this spot guaranteed? Because I couldn't find a convenience store where Rolo was above M&M's.
Hmm. I would have to assume there's deals like that because that's the only reason that Necco wafers would still be on the shelf. That is single. There, it's chalk. It's colored chalk, people. It's not candy.
Well, I presented this theory to Soldier Ant, and he just shrugged. He just shrugged and walked away. I was like, all right, good talking to you.
Men in the military are men of few words. Or ants, in his case.
Right. So, yeah, if you know anything about that, I don't know. I don't know how you follow me on Twitter. I'm at Mike Quackenbush. Tell me, do you work in the candy industry? I'd like to know.
Wow. Now I'm going to have to go and – now I'm going to have to make a point to go to convenience stores and mm-hmm. and see this and see if I can find any kind of discrepancies. But I won't doubt that you're absolutely 100% correct.
Yeah, it's just a theory. Like, I have no evidence to support this. I'm just throwing it out there.
Interesting. Hmm. All right. Well,
so if you tuned into this hoping that there was, like, any insight to how my brain works or whatever, these last 2 minutes really covered it.
There we go. There we go. Mike Quackenbush, man of candy hierarchy. we'll have Gavin announce you that way at an upcoming show.
Please.
I'm sure you wouldn't mind at all. Well, on that note, on that complete random turn, we are coming to an end here with our breakfast. Your mocha has grown say cold. It was a nice mocha.
I'm just sucking on the bottom. It's just yuck at the bottom now.
Yes. So now is about the time to sign off. You have already mentioned your Twitter. But if there is any other appropriate social media that you would like to make sure people are aware of.
Not especially, but as I alluded to, I do a number of other podcasts.
There we go.
So I would love for you to check me out. On every Tuesday, I'm on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe with my lifelong best buddy. He's also the host of Fox and Friends on the weekends on the national news. Mm-hmm. His name is Clayton Morris. He joins me over in the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. And we talk about everything over there, pop culture at large. There's really no agenda over there. It's whatever comes out of our brains. On Fridays, believe it or not, I am the host of a parenting podcast called Daddy on Board. And you can check that out at your peril. On Sundays, I join with Clayton's wife, Natalie Morris, who you may know from CNBC. She and I host together The Trending Show, about the top trending topics that week on Google and in Twitter. So those are the three chief podcasts where you can catch me. All of those are part of the Grizzly Productions family. Go to grizzlyproductions.tv for that and all the other great podcasting content. I think we have a new podcast every single day over at grizzlyproductions.tv. So plenty of content for you. It's free to subscribe, kids.
Enjoy it. And, of course, to see Mr. Lightning Mike Quackenbush in action with some of the many matches that he has mentioned with Johnny Saint and Chikara, Mike and Johnny Saint against Colt Cabana and Johnny Kidd, please go to smartmarkvideo.com where you can purchase a physical DVD copy or, you can stream and watch video on demand and see it live right there on your computer screen if you cannot wait for the mail.
That's right. And they also, you know, recently they've had an issue over there with the downloadable MP4s, which they're working diligently to resolve. And I believe they were about to totally change service providers because whoever the heck was running that for them, I don't even know the name of the company, they totally goofed it up.
Ah.
And they just had it with them. Like, I guess their support team or whatever really hasn't resolved it. It's been quite a little while now from what I understand. So I have a feeling a huge shift is about to happen there, and they're going to change over to a new service provider so they can get that back up and running because lots of people, that's how they want the content, and you've really got to be able to deliver it to people the way they want it nowadays, you know?
Absolutely. And especially all those overseas fans that I know enjoy the content quite a bit.
That's right.
Yes, it is the easiest way for them to get their hands on it, without a doubt, without paying all those extra shipping fees and such.
Yeah, we have a huge following in Bermuda. I don't know if you knew that.
I hope so. And if you would like, I will start working on getting us down there.
It seems like it'd be nice to visit.
It would. It's a beautiful place. You should go there if you ever have an opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's a very laid-back sort of environment, very different from the other Caribbean islands. So mm-hmm. it's I just think you should one day experience life on a moped. I'd love to see that.
The gauntlet has been thrown down, Mr. Drummond.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Mike, thank you once again for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join me. And, yeah, everyone, Chikara, please check it out. ChikaraPro.com will let you know where all of the upcoming shows are. Last mention of things, the next round of upcoming shows featuring the Young Lions Cup tournament is coming up. The first one on July 28th. At the Strive Center in the debut, I believe, in Portland, Maine.
Right.
And then the very next day, Sunday, July 29th, in Everett, Massachusetts. Everyone returns back to Everett. Mm-hmm. So please, if you're in those areas, come and see the shows. And, of course, as I mentioned, ChikaraPro.com, you can see all the upcoming action. So let's actually sign off this time.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, Mike, and thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Bye now.